do open public input, and again, most of you have done this before. Those of you that haven't, 3 minutes, you'll hear the buzzer go off. That's the end of the time. You can bring your thoughts to a closure, but not going on. So I'm going to call you up two at a time. So Paula Sweden and Shannon Strobel, please. Take her away.
Good afternoon, Chairman Smith, Commission members, Director, Deputy Director. thank you for opening up this time to comment. And as you can imagine, I'm not here to talk about frogs and butterflies. so I do want to address my comments to the tensions and difficult situations that we have over wolves right now. I wanted to make a couple clarifying comments about the public statements that Conservation Northwest has been making about the the current proposed lethal action on the old profanity territory. And I just think it's important for everybody to understand where we're coming from on that. And then I just want to say a couple things about thoughts and ideas for the future. So first of all, I want everybody to understand that we made that statement out of the utmost respect for everybody involved, including the director, including all the agency staff that are working really, really hard on the ground. And from a policy perspective, utmost respect for the rancher, rancher and ranchers. We fully support the protocol. We fully support the WAG process. We submitted an amicus brief, and I did a declaration for the injunctive hearing that happened a couple weeks ago, and it wasn't accepted, but the content of that was to, describe the incredible quality of the process that a bunch of diverse stakeholders went through to come up with that protocol, and also our organization's, deep commitment to collaboration and understanding where everybody's coming from, and especially understanding the difficulties that ranchers face from a variety of perspectives or variety of forces, wolves included. So, so for us to come out and say, in this instance, we don't agree with the decision, it's saying something, right? I mean, it's a big deal for us. But I want to make it absolutely clear that we're not abandoning our care for wanting to make sure ranchers come through this hole. And we're certainly not abandoning the collaborative process. And it's not a statement of thinking that there's something wrong with the protocol. I actually think the current protocol accommodates adaptation, and it accommodates discretion. And our sense of this particular situation is that let me back up for a second, and in case you don't know me, we came out, in public support of the lethal action of profanity in 2016, and that was extraordinarily emotionally difficult. It cost us, friends and members and donors, and we had in 2012 even for Wedge, and it's not made us popular. We just think that three times in a row in one spot is an indication that we all need to think about doing something different, and we don't have the answer, and so we want to roll up our sleeves and figure out something that works for everybody, including keeping ranchers on the landscape, keeping them whole. But that's really good wolf habitat, and we don't want wolf sinks.
Thanks, Paula. Commissioner Baker.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paula. Earlier this morning, possibly in the Wildlife Committee, an issue came up regarding science or thoughtful people postulating on when to use lethal removal with respect, and then how long it lasts, sort of like how long such a punishment. Do the wolves remember? Do the cows remember? Do the ranchers remember? Mm-hmm. You're a very well-educated biologist. What, do you have an opinion on that?
So thank you for that, and I do remember the discussion. I think it was a question that you raised, Commissioner Thornburn, and I think the context in which I'd like to address that is what were our expectations when we were putting the protocol together? And, you know, unfortunately, there's not a huge amount of very specific science about the effectiveness of lethal in different situations. There is some science out there. The department and, you know, the WAG relied at the time on a paper that synthesized, you know, years and years of data from the Northern Rocky Mountains. And there's a lot in that paper. You know, there's the going quickly stuff comes from that. The, you know, reducing pack size for feeding mouths or, you know, there's statistics about that. But there is some science in there about there's an expectation that when you do lethal, you don't have to come back and do it year after year. So yes, you know, you had said there was a you know, there's a need to use it to provide immediate relief, and we did discuss that in the WAG. But there was definitely an expectation of, you know, we would hope that it would change the pattern for a longer period than that. And so even though it may not be explicit in the current protocol, it was certainly, you know, as a WAG participant, it was certainly my expectation. And I mean, and that's why we support the use of the tool, right? Because it has worked. But it's the expectation that it allows for the end of the conflict and then everybody to learn about how to prevent it in the future, that continued learning of the non-lethals and how do we make them more effective. So from my perspective, absolutely, there's an expectation that it would last more and we wouldn't have to do it in the same place year after year. So, okay, thanks.
I guess I just want to take the time and publicly thank Paula and Diane back there. Because both of them, we should be polar opposites, but every time I see you guys, a smile comes on my face, and you're always good for a hug. And we do. We have a ton more heavy lifting to do, but I know good and well that you guys are going to be there to help us do it. And I just wanted to thank you both.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner.
Me too. Steve Shanawas, please, and Shannon.
Sharon.
I'm sorry. Sharon. And Steve?
I don't think he's here.
Okay. Then Dave Krunemus again. So Shannon, please.
Sharon.
Sharon. I'm sorry.
I'm kind of new at this, so.
Last name.
I'm kind of new at this, so I won't be very polished, I'm sure, but I have 3 points to make. And I'm just going to read them in the since we have a short time. The first is I would plead to stop using WAG to rubber stamp department policy and to consider it as a public and consider it as a public input to stop doing that. WAG is perhaps useful for developing some social tolerance between stakeholders in the group itself and not beyond that. We need a real and legitimate opportunity for the public to offer input on wolf policy. The 2017 lethal removal protocol reflects neither good science nor was there any meaningful public input on its development. It was conceived behind closed doors, and even WAG members were not sure what it said when presented with it. I was there and I saw what happened. Point two, stop killing wolves and get a grip on the fact it's not solving the problem. Even the cows don't want to be on an allotment where they can't be defended or attended to. The department must start seriously working with the Forest Service and others to get unsuitable allotments retired or moved, places that are good wildlife habitat and poor for livestock. Otherwise, the hole just keeps getting dug deeper. It's a failed and costly process that's going on. And three, the more the department keeps fruitlessly killing wolves, the more de facto poaching occurs. We see it in claims of in the act and also self-defense. No wolf should ever be killed or injured for claims of self-defense, except in very unusual cases such as rabies. Wolves do not attack humans. Wolves do try to discourage humans from approaching their pups. People in wolf country need to know this. Penalties for violations need to be swift and sure. And I'll just add a call. Those were my 3 points, but I think there's a growing wave that really wants a change here. Nothing else has been tried. The science is not supporting what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
That would be Sharon.
I'm sorry.
We've got it, Sharon.
Sharon. No, it's just a long day. Ronald Reed, please. I got that one. And Dave.
Okay. Again, my name is Dave Kernquist. I'm from Squim, Washington. Good afternoon, commissioners and staff. I'm here this time to offer my support for the proposed license fee increase. The years between fish and wildlife license fee increases creates concerns when the new fees come out. This year's proposal is talking about a 15% increase. While that sounds like a lot, the cost of everything keeps going up. If I had my druthers, the license fee structure would be tied to the cost of living adjustment or consumer price index, which would provide for smaller incremental increases on an annual basis, provide a more stable funding base, and remove the agency from repeated returns to the legislature asking for fee increases. Within the current license structure, one area of concern to me is the one-day charter stamp license. The most recent data I have is for fiscal year 2017. Approximately 25,000 charter stamps were sold at $8.50 each. It is estimated that 46% of those licenses went to non-residents, 54% went to residents. Using those numbers, the department lost $133,975 on non-resident license purchases and $38,475 for residents, resulting in a minimum loss of $172,500 to the agency over what would have been collected if the charter stamp was the same as a one-day fishing license. Over the years, the department has lost millions of dollars in revenue through the sales of one-day charter stamps. It's time for the charter stamp to be removed and the one-day charter license fee to be the same as the one-day combination license fee charged to residents and non-residents. In line with that, I would also like to propose again that the halibut catch record card fee be added to the temporary license fee purchase. We need to know how many people are fishing for halibut so accurate calculations beyond the creel checks on the docks can be made. And I would personally like to thank all of you for your time. I know how difficult a commissioner's job can be. I've been involved with wildlife management for almost 50 years now, and I do appreciate your time, and thank you for it.
Thank you, sir. Heath and Ronald.
Thank you. I commented this morning, and I hadn't planned to comment again this afternoon, but when we had our break, I found out that the Center for Biological Diversity's action to try and get a temporary restraining order for killing the Profanity Peak wolves for the second or third time had been turned down. And I have to echo some of what Sharon has said here. You have empirical evidence that killing wolves doesn't work. I mean, it's clear as day that when you kill wolves, they disperse, they go to other packs, they create new packs, and what, within a year, they're back in the same boat they were in a year ago. I just don't understand it. The cost to the taxpayers. I mean, I've paid hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes over my career and being a businessman in this state. And it kills me that my tax dollars are going to kill wolves. Over 70% of Washington citizens, this is a poll from last year, don't want wolves killed. They want wolf recovery. And I agree. I hate to see pictures of calves that are killed. But my God, you've got to start doing something to change things. You've got to remedy and resolve this. You can't just keep going back and killing wolves when you know it doesn't work. It's the definition of insanity. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It's costing my tax dollars when I want nothing to do with it. And 70% of the Washington citizens are behind me. So I don't get it. I don't get why it's so darn hard to stop this. It's madness. And, you know, I've been to a WAG meeting. WAG does not support my perspective. And you can't put 18 people together and call it public input. I'm sorry. That's just not reality. I mean, my wife and I have worked real hard, and we live in a rural area. We have some wolves that visit us about every 2 months, and we love to hear them howling. It's an incredible spiritual experience. Anyway, thank you all. I really appreciate the time to speak today, and I hope that you'll take my ideas and really consider them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronald. Appreciate it. Anne Prenya? Prenya. And Heath, I got you.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Director,
Thanks
Deputy.
For doing this, you said good morning.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. I'm so used to it being the morning. I was watching this morning, so I got the benefit of a little bit of that, but I'm maybe thrown off because I have my three kids for the weekend, including today. My wife took an extended trip, so I actually ended up being quite happy that the item was postponed for a month because it was going to be a real mess dealing with kids tomorrow. But anyways, I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you. I wanted to just offer three things. First, I want to support and really applaud the efforts of Dave Kroonquist on the halibut catch record card. He has been working very, very hard on that, including in the legislative session, and including this issue related to how do we get better tracking of the charter harvest. So I know that Commissioner Holtzmiller kind of noticed that issue, and I hope that this commission will engage in that to make sure that that gets addressed. It's really important as a fishery. Second item, I wanted to talk about the Columbia River Policy Review. I did hear the Fish Committee report this morning. I was able to dial in last night, which is always difficult with three kids, taking a kid to dance last night as I was trying to do that. But I do have some concerns with the report. I know that's already been identified. I mentioned something on the phone call last night that I wanted to actually show you. So this is page 10 of 13 of the Mount Hood report. And it's not an issue of the Mount Hood getting it wrong, because this is actually the data that was put together by staff. And I'll tell you why it's really disappointing to me is that, as you know, a key part of this policy was both off-channel harvest and mainstem harvest. It's key to the whole underpinnings of the plan. This chart, as well as the data that's basically been presented in the staff review, is only mainstem harvest. So if you look here in 2017, you'll see zero harvest on the commercial side all along this 2017 bar chart. If you actually go add in the off-channel harvest numbers, you will find out that actually the commercial side harvested more fish than the recreational side throughout the mainstem. You will find out that during summers, the commercial and the off-channel areas harvested more fish than all the way from the mouth of the Columbia to Priest Rapids Dam up in Graybill Country, as I call it. So, and it also missed 17,000 fish, or 12,000 fish caught in the off-channel areas during the fall. So clearly there's some more work that's needed on both the staff document as well as the Mount Hood summary. We'll be providing those comments, but that is really a massive piece of information to not have in there. The other request that I would make moving forward is really one of trying to make sure that we're dealing with apples and apples in the same rules for all of our different gears. And I think you've heard from us about what happened 2 years ago is you guys extended zones 4 and 5 gill netting, and you had monitors and observers so we could prove that, hey, these are selective after all. We've been very concerned with the changes that they made to the release mortality rate based on that observer data. And I think the message you guys heard after that observer data was that they were very selective in what you had there, but actually actually what the incidence of steelhead handling were actually about 60% higher than what they anticipated. So I don't want to go over my time, but I'll say I'll send some additional thoughts there about really needing to make sure that we're using the same protocols for all these different gears and that we're subjecting them to independent review. So I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Heath. Appreciate it. Amoroso Weiss?
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Ann Present. I'm an attorney with about 40 years of environmental experience. And for one of the few times in my life, I found myself in the 70% in the wolf category. I'm here just briefly to talk about what I see as an opportunity for the state to be a leader in protecting the endangered species within its borders. Like I said, I've been practicing for 40 years, and one of the areas that I practice in is protecting endangered species. And I'm seeing the rollback and what's happening at the federal level, as we're probably all aware. And I know that it's really a good opportunity for the states to step forward and protect the animals within their borders. And just what I've been observing on the, what's happening with the wolves in the state, that's not happening here, but I think it's a really golden opportunity for us to step forward and be a role model. I think people would look to Washington as a role model for that. You know, the kind of the things we've been talking about today, there have been repeated lethal removals of wolves, which are either federally endangered, but mostly the ones that are removed here have been state endangered. And I think, that's a mistake here. I think for the OPT pack in particular, for example, most recently, I guess there's going to be, they may be out there killing one or two wolves today. I think there was a loss of a single cow that could have been easily compensated for, and we're essentially threatening the loss of that pack, which is state endangered. So I'd just like to look to you commissioners to think, what can we do to be, a model of excellence in this area, particularly as they roll back the federal protections. So thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Renee Dagseth, please, and Amber.
Chair Smith, members of the Commission, Director Sue Swind, my name is Amaruk Weiss. I'm with the Center for Biological Diversity, and I'm here today on behalf of our more than 30,000 Washington residents who are supporters and members of our organization. I think I'm going to hit on three points briefly. So the Commission is aware that we have a lawsuit pending against the state for violations of state law, SEPA and APA, with the kill orders and the lethal protocol wolf-livestock interaction protocol that the orders are based on. As a result of that lawsuit, we're in court hearings. We've been in several. As a result of that lawsuit, we've gotten discovery and we've received documents that aren't necessarily posted to the department's website, but they are part of the discovery process. So we've been able to see, for instance, the staff recommendations, all the reports that went into making the director's the presentation to the director so that he could make a decision. And a couple of things that I think are worth commenting on. You know, in the court hearing today, the AG, who's representing the department, said that the rancher in question has tried to move his cattle several times, but he wasn't able to, and that he can't be expected to move all his cattle. There's still 20 cattle right in the area where the high wolf use areas, where the conflicts have been going on, and the department is saying he can't be expected to do that. A good faith effort is good enough. If that's the case, why is the department even promoting the use of non-lethal measures? Why promote only a good faith effort instead of an effort that actually works? Why not do something to get the cattle moved? Because clearly, that's what needs to be done. That's why he's moving the cattle, or trying to, but he's not successful. But to say he can't be expected to move them all, a good faith effort is good enough, that does not speak well for the state's attitude towards the use of non-lethal measures. Why even bother? Another point I want to bring up is that in some of the discovery that we were provided, we did get the full reports with the staff recommendations that helped the director make his decision. And one of the things that we noted that I know our members are going to be very concerned to hear about, and I don't know if any of you are members of our organization, but even if you're not, you should be concerned to hear about this. The reports indicate that this is happening in the exact same place. where the profanity peak episodes were happening in 2016. The salt blocks are there. The rendezvous site is there. Ron Reed mentioned before the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. I'm going to make a little play on words here. I think we can now begin to say the definition of profanity is killing wolves over and over again and expecting a different result. And that actually brings me, if you'll bear with me, 30 seconds. I want to address Commissioner Baker's question about how long there's an effect, a punishment, a remembrance by the wolf pack of what happened. And so, first of all, I would like to mention there is a scientific study, Musiani et al. Is out of Alberta, and it talks about the fact that if you kill wolf packs, you're going to see maybe no depredations for a year or two, but then you're going to see them all over again when that vacuum is filled up. So it doesn't last when you kill the whole pack. But secondly, just really briefly, how many of you have dogs here? Does anybody here have dogs? I know I'm not supposed to ask you a question. Okay, I'm going to suspect that some of you have dogs. Okay, I'm a former dog trainer. Two things I learned as a dog trainer is when you don't want your dog to do something, you don't just say no, because they don't know what you're saying no to. Are you saying, no, don't chew on that table leg? No, don't wag your tail. No, don't breathe, because they're doing all of that at once. And one last point. When you punish your dog for doing something like taking the roast off the table and you punish them half an hour after they did it, when you come home from the grocery store and find the roast is gone, if you punished your dog by killing it, do you think the other dogs in your household are going to realize that the reason that dog was killed because it stole the roast and that they shouldn't take roasts off your table? Wolves and dogs are related.
Thank you.
There's nothing that shows that a wolf, there's no scientific study that shows that a wolf learns anything from its pack members being killed.
Thank you
so much.
Claire Davis, please. And Renee.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for this opportunity to address you. I'm just a generalist. Nevertheless, I have read every single study that the Department of Fish and Wildlife has cited in support of the protocol. And I would say that DFW's current practice of killing wolves in the Colville National Forest in the Old Profanity Peak area is inconsistent with the spirit and the letter of the protocol, and more importantly, flies in the face of the best available science. We can do better. I know we can. Also in support of some of the previous speakers this afternoon, I would say that the WAG is not providing an opportunity for real and meaningful public involvement. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Renee. And Claire, you're the last one for this session.
All right. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Claire Davis, and I'm the attorney who's been representing the Center for Biological Diversity in Cascadia Wildlands. Normally, I save my speaking for court, and I say my piece there. I tried this morning, and as I'm sure you all know, we lost our chance to get a temporary restraining order restricting the agency's action to kill the OPT pack. We faced a very difficult burden with the court of showing that the agency action was, you know, so irrational that the court needed to intervene and that we would suffer irreparable harm if there wasn't intervention immediately. But my hope is that as the governing body over fish and wildlife, that the standard would not be so extreme here and that the significant evidence of irrational decision-making that we've discovered in the course of prosecuting this court case would make a difference to the commission in governing how fish and wildlife operates. And I think that that's particularly true in this latest lethal removal action, which is Profanity Peak. We all remember the controversy from Profanity Peak. It's Profanity Peak many, many times over. It's the same producer on whose behalf the state has now killed 15 of the 19 endangered wolves that you've had to take a lethal removal action toward. Research by your own, someone who now works as a WDFW biologist, shows that this single producer is 14 times more likely to suffer predations than other producers in wolf-occupied territory. And it's 3 years in a row that we've had predations and then lethal action in the same area with the same producer. And most notably, the same behavior. Amaruk noted in her comments the similarities. But here, once again, the state has known the rendezvous site for these wolves for a month. The producer has known the rendezvous site for a month. And both the state and the producer have known that this rendezvous site overlapped with where the cattle are and where the cattle are purposefully concentrated by the producer with the use of a salt block. Yet, to this day, the salt block has not been moved, and the cattle have not been successfully moved from that area. Amaro commented, but it's worth emphasizing because it's one of the most remarkable things I've heard the state say in the course of this litigation, that the producer could not be expected to take the step of moving the cattle away from the rendezvous site where wolves were concentrated. If that's the case, why are we collaring wolves? Because, you know, we're collaring wolves so that we can tell producers where they are and they can keep their cattle clear of where the wolves are concentrated. To say that this most basic step of successfully moving the cattle away from a known wolf gathering point is not even required before the state is going to spend tens of thousands of dollars killing members of an endangered species strikes me as particularly outrageous. And I think I would ask the commission to take a careful look at what's going on here, because, you know, it's only going to get worse in this area as long as these practices continue. We would be happy to share the discoveries that we've made with any commission members who are interested in taking a look at this, because you're on the verge of, I think, a disaster here that will make Profanity Peak pale in comparison.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That brings to a closure the open public input.